Welcome to the Kitchen Counter Podcast, episode 108, 5 Tips for Fantastic Fish. Hey everybody, thank you so much for downloading and listening to this episode of the show. I'm Roger, your host, and this is the podcast that's all about home cooking. You know, getting back in the kitchen, having more fun, learning new things, being more confident, all that good kind of stuff. Today's episode is going to be tackling one of the most feared items in any home cook's repertoire, and that is cooking fish. We're going to get into that in a minute. But before I get there, as always, I want to remind you all that I love to hear from you. So if you'd like to send me an email, if you have any questions that you'd like me to cover on upcoming episodes, or if you just want to say hi or share recipes or whatever, I'd love to hear from you. You can send me an email over to feedback@kitchencounterpodcast.com. Of course, you can always find me over at Facebook at facebook.com/kitchencounterpodcast or on Twitter at TKCpodcast. Also, in case you missed the information the last time, whenever it was that I mentioned it, the podcast is available on Apple Podcasts. It's also available on Stitcher and Google Play Music. But two of the newer places that it's available, and if these are places you like to listen to content, and you prefer to listen in these locations, I want you to know you can find the podcast over there. And the first one is iHeartMusic. So you can find the show over on iHeartMusic, subscribe there. And on Spotify, you can find the podcast on Spotify and subscribe there. So if those are two places you prefer to listen to music and your other podcasts, the show is now available through those channels. And I will put a link to both of those in the show notes over at kitchencounterpodcast.com/108. kitchencounterpodcast.com/108. That'll get you to the show notes for this episode, where I'll have the links to Spotify, iHeartMusic, and everything else I mentioned in this episode. All right, that's all I've got in the way of housekeeping today, so I'm excited to get into this topic. So let's talk about cooking fish. You know, I haven't talked about cooking fish a lot on the show yet, dribs and drabs here and there in the past, but I haven't really dedicated a whole episode to it. At least I don't think I have, thinking back. And I think it's time to, because fish for home cooks is often a very scary proposition. If you look at fish consumption historically in the United States, and even probably more recently, fish consumption is actually going up per capita in the United States. And people are eating more fish out at restaurants. In fact, I know some people that whenever they go out to eat, they just basically eat seafood because they don't make seafood at home, and their opportunity to eat seafood is when they go out to a restaurant. So people are eating more fish. They're eating more fish out at restaurants, or I should say seafood, but they're not necessarily cooking more seafood at home. Now, you know, seafood in general is healthy for you. Fish is very healthy. It's lean. It's much of it is low in fat, and it's very high quality protein. It has omega-3 fatty acids, full of vitamins and minerals. I don't want to go into the healthy food aspects of fish too deep. Just know that the American Heart Association wants you to eat fish a couple of times a week. Pretty much every health body in North America recommends that you eat your fair share of fish. By the way, my cat is very excited about this episode. I don't know if you can hear this, but she's about 6 feet away, and I made the mistake of leaving a shoebox out and open with, you know, the crumpled up paper that comes in the shoes, and she's now making a nest in there. I think she's getting comfortable so she can hear the episode better. She wants fish too. Anyway, so fish consumption in the United States up overall over the past decade, but also up proportionally eating out in restaurants. And, you know, I think that's a great way to get your fish if you don't cook fish at home. I can't remember who said it, and probably multiple people have, but it's the same thing with vegetables, right? And they say, like, the best vegetable for you is the vegetable that you'll eat, right? Meaning if you don't eat vegetables, you're not getting any of the nutritional benefits of vegetables. So eating any type of vegetable is usually better than eating no vegetable at all. And I think to a degree that might be the same with fish. Although, you know, in restaurants, you're probably going to be getting a lot of sodium, a lot of fat, it's going to be made to taste as great as possible. So it's going to be done up in a rich sauce probably. So you might be getting a few more calories and fat and things like that, but you're eating fish. Now, interestingly, the National Fisheries Institute has released statistics just at the end of last year in 2017 for the 2016 statistics for how much seafood Americans ate. And they say that Americans ate 14.9 pounds of seafood per capita, which overall in the past several years was kind of at the top of the upper end of an upward trend. At the top of the list of seafood consumption is shrimp, actually, and Americans eat just a little over 4 pounds per capita of shrimp. Next on the list is salmon, about 2.18 pounds of salmon per capita. And surprisingly, canned tuna, which I thought would be higher on the list, comes in at third at just over 2 pounds per capita. The rest of the list is composed of some whitefish, tilapia, pollock, cod, and then you've got some shellfish on here as well. Clams, crab, and catfish rounds it out. So Americans eating more fish, but not eating as much cooked at home. So how do we change that? Today, I want to bring you 5 tips for cooking more fish at home to make it a little easier, maybe a little less intimidating. And to do that, I'm going to focus on kind of a specific, I don't want to say a species or even a variety of fish, but kind of a loose family of fish that we're going to call whitefish. Okay. You can lump and split fish up dozens of different ways, but I generally, in a high level, kind of look at things like shellfish is their own distinct group, right? So that includes clams, oysters, crab, shrimp, lobster, crawfish. Those folks belong in your shellfish group. Then you've got things like fatty, oily fish, and those are your salmons and your tunas, things like that. And then you've got things that fall more into, I would say, a whitefish category, which, as the name implies, kind of has white translucent flesh. And those are fish such as snapper, tilapia, catfish, sole, haddock, bass. Those are all varieties of whitefish. And that's what I want to focus on a little bit today for a couple of main reasons, which I think are of great interest to most home cooks. One is that on the whole, whitefish is slightly less expensive than things like shrimp or salmon. I think there are a great variety of whitefish to choose from, and they're generally, no matter where you are in the country, you're going to be able to find something that might be reasonably local to you, but we're going to talk about that, you know, selecting fish in just a second. But finally, and I think most importantly, whitefish is mild in flavor, so it appeals to a lot of different palates, old and young. It's easy to dress up the flavors, and it's really, really fast. Really easy and fast to cook. You can bring some whitefish fillets home and, you know, no joke, have these ready to eat in 10, 12 minutes. I mean, they're really easy to deal with. So I want to go through some tips for dealing with whitefish specifically. In the future, we're going to be talking more maybe about shrimp, salmon, that sort of stuff. But today we're going to stick with whitefish. All right. So tip number one is about finding your fish. So where in the world do you go to get your fish? And I want to talk about fresh versus frozen fish, okay? It depends a little bit on where you live. So I'm fortunate enough to live on the West Coast in the state of Oregon. So I have a pretty good variety of places I can go find fresh fish if I want that's caught right off the coast. There's a couple of markets in town that have a really great fish department. And there's even a dedicated fish monger in town, a seafood shop dedicated to fish. So these are all great places to go find seafood. And if you can, and if fish is going to become something that's going to be an important part of your diet or you want to cook more, it's not a terrible idea to find a really good place to get fish and kind of stick with it. Get to know the people, get to know the fishmonger, because they can really help and guide you to great buys, new and interesting fish. They can give you tips on how to prepare your fish. But the big question I think that people have is fresh or frozen fish. Now, it's almost kind of a trick question if you're buying your fish from a commercial source, because all fish in the United States by law that is sold through a commercial source, so a grocery store or a supermarket or whatever, That fish has to be frozen before it could be sold retail to kill parasites, to make sure the fish is, from a food safety perspective, is safe to eat. So in a way, if you're buying your fish from a grocery store fish counter, it's already been frozen. Only if you've caught it yourself, or if you're essentially buying the fish right off the boat, I think, you can get fish that's not been previously frozen. But I'll tell you what, previously frozen fish or freezing fish does not really impact the flavor, the texture, or the nutritional value of the fish. So sometimes when you go to your supermarket and you go to the fish case, for example, they might have an array of beautiful fresh or previously, you know, quote unquote fresh, which still means previously frozen fish, you know, laid out on display. There might also be a cabinet, a freezer cabinet right next door, where you've got fish that are frozen kind of in the vacuum sealed pouches. You really can't go wrong choosing either one. Now, of course, the fish that you purchased that's not currently frozen, you can take that home right away and prepare it, which is what I would recommend you do. You don't really want to leave that in your fridge for any period of time. It will really degrade if it's not on ice. So you want to take that home and cook it right away. But if you want to stock up or have some fish for a few days from now or sometime into the future, the frozen packages of fish, of the fish fillets, are a great way to go. I use those quite a bit. You thaw them out in your fridge. You throw them in the fridge the night before. The next day, they're practically like fresh fish. And in fact, many of the fish fillets you buy that way were actually frozen, flash frozen on the boat from which the fish was caught. So you're getting really, really quickly frozen fish. So it's actually probably maybe even more fresh than some of the fish that are nicely displayed out in the supermarket fish case, because freezing it preserves that freshness, just like frozen vegetables. Most of those vegetables are frozen at the height of their ripeness, or at the peak moment that they should be consumed. They're frozen. So when you get those vegetables and you put them into your meal, or you thaw them out, eat them, whatever, they're just almost as fresh as the day they were picked. It's kind of the same way with the frozen fish. So don't let anybody guilt you into thinking that frozen fish is not a good way to go. But either way, don't overthink the frozen versus quote-unquote fresh fish. Just pick the fish that appeals to you and get it home and make it. And you know, you've probably heard the old adage that the fish should not smell fishy when you purchase it. That's a good rule of thumb. It should smell of seawater. You know, even just a slight fishiness is fine. But if it smells like fish, it's probably not the freshest cut of fish there, and you might want to avoid it. Okay, you've gotten your beautiful whitefish fillets. Let's just say you picked up some nice red snapper fillets. You've gotten those home, and now you're ready to cook them. Now, this is where most home cooks get a little clammy skin, because they don't really feel comfortable cooking fish. Well, there's really two methods, and this is going to be my next two tips, two really, really easy methods for making whitefish. The first method I will call the broiler method, and it almost doesn't get any simpler than this. You simply take a broiler pan. Well, first of all, preheat your oven, right? Preheat your broiler so it's good and hot. Take a broiler pan, spray it with a little cooking oil, rub it down with a little olive oil, whatever, grease it. Lay your fillets on the broiler pan, sprinkle with a little salt, pepper, brush with a little oil. That's it. Pop them into the oven at the highest rack. You want them right under the broiler, right near the direct heat. Depending on how thick your fillets are, those could be done in as little as 2 or 3 minutes. I don't know if you've ever heard of the 10-minute rule, but it's a fairly common rule of thumb when cooking fish fillets. And the rule of 10 says that measure the fillet of your fish at its thickest point, and then calculate using a 10-minute per inch cooking time. Now, this assumes you're cooking it at high heat, like under a broiler or in a very hot pan, like on the stovetop in a hot skillet. So our red snapper fillets might only be maybe a half inch thick, which means 5 minutes, right? Because 10 minutes per inch, if it's a half an inch, that's half of 10 minutes, 5 minutes. So you can see that thin whitefish fillets have the potential to cook really quickly. When it's done in the broiler, pop it out, spritz it with some lemon juice, and you've got a great, healthy fish fillet ready to go in under 5 minutes. Now, tip number three, which I will call the stovetop method, it's only slightly more difficult or involved than the broiler method. And this is simply you're taking a skillet on the stovetop, you're going to heat it with some oil and maybe a little bit of butter, and you're going to saute your fish fillets on the skillet instead of just putting them on a broiler pan and letting them sit in the broiler for a few minutes. Now, if you're cooking for more than two people, I generally recommend to do the broiler method because you can usually get more than two fillets on a broiler pan at once. In a skillet, you don't want to crowd the fillets, and it's really oftentimes hard to get more than two fillets in a skillet at once. So if you're cooking for two, I say do the stovetop method for sure. If you're cooking for more, maybe think about the broiler method just for ease. I mean, you can do more than two on the stovetop method. It just requires keeping fish warm and cooking in batches. So if you're doing two, stick with stovetop, I think. Now you're going to cook at high heat again, so you're going to get your skillet on the stovetop, turn it up to medium-high heat. You know, on a scale of 1 to 10, we're talking 7 to 8. Let that heat up. Put a little oil and butter in the pan. Then what I like to do is hit your fillets with a sprinkle of salt, sprinkle of black pepper, and then I like to take just a little bowl with a little bit of flour in it and do a light dredge. Just pull your fillets through the flour, shake off any excess. You don't want any clumpy or thick coating of flour, just a little bit, and then lay those fillets down in your nice, hot, oiled, buttered skillet. And then if you think back to the 10-minute rule, we're still using that, except what I didn't mention when we talked about broilers is that when you're cooking in a skillet, you generally want to flip the fish over halfway through the cooking time. So if we're talking about half-inch fillets, that's a 5-minute cooking time, so we're going to cook for 2.5 minutes on one side, flip them over, and then cook for another 2.5 minutes on the other side. Now, if your fish is thinner than a half inch, like if you're cooking with little skinny tilapia fillets or something, or little orange ruffy fillets that are maybe a quarter of an inch thick, you don't need to flip them. They're thin enough. They're going to cook through, you know, in a few minutes, and no need to flip. But, you know, if it's a half an inch to an inch, stick with the idea that you're going to use the 10-minute rule, flip them halfway through. What dredging your fillets through the flour does, it will give your fillets a little more of a crispness, a little more of a brownness, and it will actually keep your fillets a little bit moister. It will kind of lock in some of that moisture. However, it's not required. If you don't want to dredge them through the flour, or you don't have any flour handy, you can do this method without that, and it works just as well. When you flip your fish over, if it breaks up a little bit, starts coming apart, don't worry about it. That's just the nature of flaky fish. It's going to taste just as good as if it was in one complete piece or if it breaks up into two pieces. Once you flipped your fish and cooked the requisite time on the other side, a couple of minutes, you're done and you're good to go. You've got a great whitefish fillet in 5 or so minutes there. Now, tip number four is don't overcook your fish. Because the whitefish cooks very quickly, I mean, we're talking about minutes, right? 2 or 3, 4, 5, 6 minutes. It's not really something you can start cooking and then divert your attention away from. So a couple of tips, if you're having side dishes that require preparation with your fish, if you're making rice or, you know, whatever, you want that stuff either made and completed or at a stage where you don't need to worry about it. Someone else is making it or it's just sitting, you know, staying warm, whatever. But you don't want to start cooking your fish and then divert your attention to make your side dishes because, one, you're not going to have enough time to make your side dishes. And, two, you will inevitably forget about your fish. And whitefish will overcook in a matter of seconds if you're not paying attention to it. That's the one tricky thing about this. So how do you tell if your fish is actually done? And, you know, using the 10-minute rule is great, but what if you run the risk of overcooking your fish because you're cooking at a hotter temperature than you think you are, or you're not using a strict timer and you're not totally watching the time? So how do you tell if a fish is done? Well, there's a couple of ways you can do it. The scientific technical way would be to use an instant read thermometer, and while I am a big advocate of instant read thermometers when it comes to things like chicken, beef, and pork, I find that with thin whitefish, it's a bit impractical because oftentimes the fillets aren't substantial enough to even get the probe into it to get a good reading. So with fish, it's really generally okay to use sight and kind of look at the fish and see how it reacts to a little bit of a touch test to determine doneness. Now, Mark Bittman, in his excellent book, How to Cook Everything, he has a section on cooking fish, and he, I think, does the best job of describing how you tell if your fish is done by sight. And his two rules of thumb for sight is, he says, by the time the outside of the thinner fillets is opaque, the inside is very nearly done. This is absolutely true if you turn the fish over as you do in a pan. So what he's saying is when the outside thin parts of the fillet, because most fish fillets kind of are thin on the outside edges and kind of get fatter in the middle. So he's saying when the outside edges of those fillets are opaque and not translucent, meaning they have a solid white color, that means the inside of the fillet is almost done. You're going to be taking that off in a few seconds. He also says with thinner fillets, when the thinnest part flakes, the thicker part is done. He says, you know you've overcooked it if the thicker part flakes. So when you take a fork and you kind of pull on the, and you kind of test the thin parts of those fillets, if the fish flakes apart in the thinner parts, you know you're ready to go. If you're testing the thick part of the fish and it's flaking apart easily, you're either overcooked it already or you're pretty darn close. So you need to pull that off the heat. And keep in mind, with everything you cook, there's something called carryover cooking. So when you pull your fish out of a hot pan, it's still going to cook for a minute or so. So if the inside thick part of your fillets are not opaque and still translucent, but close, you could probably pull that out of the pan because by the time you get that onto the plate and at the place setting where people are eating it, it will have overcooked and finished cooking in the center there, and it will probably be opaque. So remember that your fish will continue to cook for a minute or so when you pull it off that really hot heat. So those two ideas, visually checking to make sure you don't overcook your fish. When the fish turns opaque on the thin parts and is nearly opaque all the way through in the middle, it's ready to go. And when it flakes easily on the edges, also ready to go. Okay? Okay, my last tip, tip number five, I know I haven't been very good at saying the numbers or making this a logical list because I'm a little bit rambly tonight, but the fifth tip for cooking whitefish, and I mentioned this a little bit right at the outset, and that is whitefish, the varieties of whitefish are generally very mild and very palatable. They're not fishy, they're not strong flavored, which means you have a little bit of liberty on what you do to these fish, right? Now, a whitefish fillet is absolutely delicious with salt, pepper, and say a little bit of lemon juice spritzed on it or a drizzle of olive oil. That's perfectly great. But don't be afraid to experiment with bolder flavors with the whitefish. For example, you can go a little bit more Latin inspired and serve your whitefish with a spoonful of fresh salsa draped over the top or a chimichurri sauce. Perhaps you want to go more Mediterranean. You could throw some capers and butter in the pan and make a little caper butter sauce and drizzle that over. You could hit it with a little bit of a splash of soy sauce to give it a really simple, salty, Asian-inspired flavor, or even dress up some ketchup with soy sauce, vinegar, and hot sauce to make sort of a rich, tomato-y, ketchup-y sauce for your fish. Really, the sky's the limit with whitefish because it is mild and therefore very versatile. In fact, Food and Wine, I found a great list from Food and Wine online for 10 easy sauces you can make for whitefish. So I'll link to that in the show notes. It's got some really interesting ideas in here. So don't be afraid to try different flavors, bolder flavors, unless you just want to keep it simple and salt, pepper, and lemon, which will be just as great for your whitefish fillets. Well, I hope you're a little bit more inspired to get into your kitchen and give cooking some fish at home a try. Head down to your store, your local fishmonger, look for a good snapper fillet or two. Tilapia is great. It's a farm fish, but it's very versatile and easy to cook. Catfish, flounder, whatever. Get down there, take those home. And remember, don't worry so much if it's fresh or frozen. Whatever looks good to you, whatever is convenient for you to use. Look at the broiler method, look at the stovetop method, decide which you're going to do. If it's just two of you, I say give the stovetop a try. If there's two, three, or four of you or more, get out your big broiler pan and do it that way. Don't overcook your fish. Remember, when it's flaking on the edges and opaque on the edges, it's about done. And don't be afraid to try pairing bold flavors with your whitefish fillet to make a versatile seafood addition to your weeknight rotation. All right, that does it for another episode of the Kitchen Counter Podcast. I hope this gave you some mojo to go out, pick up some fish, get home, and get cooking. If you have any questions, again, you can send me an email over to feedback@kitchencounterpodcast.com or find me on Facebook at facebook.com/kitchencounterpodcast or Twitter at @TKCPodcast. If you enjoyed this episode, you want to make sure you get other episodes either in the future or you want to go through the back catalog, be sure to head over to Apple Podcasts and subscribe for free so you get new shows and get access to the back catalog of episodes. Of course, you can do it on Stitcher or Google Play or iHeartRadio or Spotify or wherever it is you find all of your favorite podcasts. All right, everybody. Once again, this is Roger at the Kitchen Counter Podcast. And until next time, happy cooking.